Some questions remain the same. Some I change. Depends on how.
Oh, my bad. Let me pause the TV. Watching about the deadlock in trench warfare in World War One.
Shit. Okay.
All right, hold on. Let me find out my bright lighting level.
Go for it, man.
All right, so we got this. A little nicer. That's
how that is.
Got this, like, I got, like, smart bulbs now, so I'm all being all bougie with it.
There we go. You got the colors.
Tell me what looks good for on your end.
They all look the exact same, except one of them was red.
That one?
Yeah. You look fine, man.
I know, I'm just fucking.
I just want to see if the rave mode looks cool. All right. What's up?
All right, perfect. Everything straight?
Yeah, how you doing before we get started?
I'm good. Just woke up from this nap.
I'm feeling good. No, get yourself together.
I'm going to get right back in. Trust me. The moment I woke up, I was ready to go. But after this, I'm going to be returning to said nap. So,
I'd expect nothing less.
There we go. All right, ready?
Let's do it.
Welcome back, beloveds, to another beautiful episode of Experiment 301. I'm your host, Brother Beloved, also known as Kevin K. Pierce. And I got a real special one in the building today. I got a special guest, per usual. Somebody I consider a brother. Y'all know I don't throw these terms around. Former roommate of mine, so the living quarters was close. And on top of that, I'm proud of what he's doing today. And I think he's chock full of stories, running for some laughs, maybe more proud today, who knows. But we're going to see a smooth sail in this podcast can go. Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to introduce you to my man, Mr. Duke Becker. How you are doing today, sir?
Hello. I am doing absolutely wonderful. Wonderfully, absolutely, positively great.
Oh, there we go.
And it's Monday, you know, afternoon, about a few minutes after 4:20. So, you know, we live in life, we're living good.
had to throw that in there. Perfect.
Ain't nobody dope as me. I'm just so fresh, so clean.
There we are. He's listening to Outkast very heavily today. I think that's what we're taking away from here.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
All right, so as you know, I like to start all my interviews off the same way. The year is 1996, and a young Duke Becker is born where and to who?
All right, my parents, Wayne and Letitia Becker.
Oh, I love your mom's name.
Oh, yeah, I know. She's been getting a lot of compliments on her lately. All my friends have been finding out, and it's been, you know, it's been good.
It's a dope name.
But the, my parents were meeting with Tisha Becker. It was 7:20 a.m. October 19th. It was a Saturday.
Oh, nice.
My older sister had been hanging out with my mom, taking care of her because my dad needed to take a nap. And she went and got buffalo wings and a chocolate milkshake and Denny's and then started going into labor. So that explains why my food taste is off the wall.
I was just thinking that combo will force anything out of you, let alone a baby. So
it's part of that Libra status, you know, the duality going on.
There we go. And where'd you say it was?
Oh, Pomona, New Jersey, also known as Galloway, also known as Epsecan. You know, we kind of intermingle the lines a little bit.
There we go. We like a multi-purpose city. You never know what you get.
Technically right. Township, but you know.
Yeah, same shit, different technicalities. So I want to ask, what's an early Duke like? Like, what's a five-year-old Duke doing? What's he walking around? He's playing sports. What's going on?
All right, five-year-old Duke was definitely a quiet kid, young introvert in the making. Definitely had some under-tinglings of anxiety going on, so I had a lot. Actually, strangely enough, my mom's been going through a lot of photographs and everything since, you know, my grandmother's passing, so she's been, you know, going through stuff. Like, got to be like 5 or 6 years old. Got the belly going, a few little rolls on the side. And I got fat bag of Cheetos right next to me. And I got the Cheeto dust all over the face. Got the hands all grimy up and everything. Absolutely outstanding. but one that says even more about me. One that says even more about what's going on in here. I think it was, there's two different birthdays where I was both pictured under the table crying while people were singing happy birthday to me.
Dang. You're just like, no, the joy, make it stop.
Yeah, no, there's all these people paying attention to me. I don't like it. I don't want it. Take it away. No, thank you.
Right. Epic. Talk about some epic foreshadowing.
Well, maybe if my parents paid more attention, I would have wouldn't have been so tweaked out in high school.
You never know. You never know. So, I also want to ask, what was the first album you fell in love with? Because you are such a music fan. And I'm assuming it happened somewhere in that 5 to 10-year-old range that you really found the album. No?
No. I didn't really like music up, like really like get into the music and like kind of understand the feelings that it evokes and like the emotions until like middle school.
Mm-hmm.
I would hear the radio in the car, the CDs and stuff like that, but we weren't like very musical, always having stuff playing, stuff like that. So, am I getting given feedback? Because I'm getting feedback on my end. Is that
coming on? No, you're good. Keep it going.
All right, cool. Just want to make sure. Now, I want to say that the music, the first album that really I can remember impacting me, I know it's going to surprise you. It's really going to make you drop your jaw. It's Man on the Moon.
But, oh, would have never guessed.
I know. But
for those that don't know Duke's a huge Kid Cudi fan. Like, huge Kid Cudi fan.
So, but I'm trying to think of like a whole project that really like boom with the lights going off. And, you know, if anything before that, it was the Lion King or the Tarzan soundtrack.
Both of which are slappers. Both
exactly. You know, we have one written by Elton John, one written by Phil Collins. They're both two of my favorite musicians ever. And, you know, it's just iconic Disney sing-along ability.
I think outside of Feel It in the Air Tonight, that Tarzan soundtrack is like Phil Collins' calling card. Like outside of the grandeur of that, you're also being my heart. So you know how much we like balance on this show.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely some other songs that might not be as notable to you, but are very big hits in the Phil Collins world. He did a great cover of Can't Hurry Love. Absolutely slaps.
Mm.
I was made famous by, the Supremes. I think that's right. Of course, my mind's going blank on me, but it's fine. You can edit that out if I'm wrong.
Anyway.
Or leave it in. I really don't care. Music is there's a lot going on in here, so I am not ashamed of using things that go on.
There we go. So what about sports? Me and you met through football, but was that your first love sports-wise?
So sports-wise, I got to say that the first love really wasn't there to begin with until I started playing Madden, like Madden 06, you know, Donnie McNabb on the cover. Things were really a good time. They had that stupid vision cone, but other than that, it was absolutely...
Oh, the QB vision was the most racist thing I've ever seen.
Oh, right. Michael Vicks was like this wide.
And yay wide. Donovan McNabb was this wide. Meanwhile, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning can see the whole fucking field. Now, I understand you had to make some quarterbacks look better than others, but come on now. You mean to tell me?
I mean, okay, maybe the only one who definitely earned theirs was like Dante Culpepper at that point. His should have been narrow as fuck.
Man, what? Like, Dante Culpepper was balling at that point, too. And like,
it didn't 2006? He was Madden cover 2001. After that, he fell off.
Fell off is just strong words. The verb is just too strong.
Okay. All right, so
I don't think the fall off happened until he was out of the league. Like, was he USFL or whatever?
USFL was in 84, so it definitely wasn't that.
Or do you go to Canada? I remember him playing in a league that was not the NFL after it was all over in the NFL.
I mean, there was the NFL Europe for a long time, which was in Madden for a while, a little back then, too. Yeah, and then there's the Canadian Football League. Maybe he did indoor. I really don't remember.
Could have been arena. I don't know. There's a lot of non-NFL leagues, but I know he was in one of them bitches.
A lot of wastes of money.
There we go. So football was the first love.
Football was the first love. I like to watch. I like to read about it. I can go bar for bar with almost anyone on Ravens and Eagles history. Ravens is a little easier because it's only my time. But Eagles history, I can get you all the way back to 1933 when it all started, because that's what I grew up in, just knowing all of it.
There we go. And also, the Ravens are your favorite team, so I would hope you're able to go toe to toe with people from what, 96, 2000. Oh, see, the Ravens are just as old as you, so it's pretty easy to pick it up.
Exactly.
There we go. So when do you start playing football?
It was definitely fifth grade. I was a badass defensive lineman. Was supposed to rock 33, ended up getting 31. It's fine. Ended up turning into my lacrosse number for years. But I was so swagged out. I had the helmet. Team, we were the Mustangs. We were red and black. So
you were born to be a Mustang, man.
That was on my Instagram post when I decided I was going to Stevenson. It was like, once a Mustang, always a Mustang. You know, some cliche shit like that.
Of course. You got to go with the cliches for your signing day post.
Most def. So, but I had the whole, like, forearm padding and everything with the hand guard. I had, like...
We lost him. Technical difficulties, folks. We're going to wait for the good brother dude to come back. He's frozen at the moment. Hell, I may edit this whole part out. Let's see. Damn, he's frozen. Wow. Can't see a word, no? All right, see if we can fix it. Oh, he's back.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Yeah, you started. I noticed you froze, and I was like, oh, shit. I thought he was
okay, it said you froze, too. Cool. We're back on the same page. That part will get it out. Last thing you said was you were talking about the armband and the badass.
Okay, yeah.
I thought I was
part of the Oakland Raiders in the 80s. And, you know, I remember I got in that first game. It was a Friday night game because we, in fifth and sixth grade, we were playing on Fridays and Saturdays and stuff, too. We're out here. We had lights at our field, so I was playing it at night. Got in on in the game. Made a tackle.
Oh, y'all fancy.
Made a tackle in my first series in the game. That's like a Warren Sapp esque story right there. Like, I was meant to be a defensive prodigy, and then somewhere along the way, I decided, oh, I'm gonna play offensive line and get this. Be told, oh, you have to step exactly this way. Now that I think about it, I haven't really thought about this before, but I really should have stuck with D-line because I'm more of an improviser within a system instead of, like, you know, take one step, take this step, hit this, hit that. Really, I think I kind of misprofiled myself a little bit.
Maybe a little, because hearing you say that, I never really thought of offensive line work that way. I've always thought of it as, hey, if you're a defensive player, I got to stop whooping the guy across from his ass to go make a tackle at some point. But on offense, it's me and you, buddy. It's me and you, so the echo of the whistle. So I've always enjoyed it from that sense. But hearing you talk about the freedom thing really makes me go, damn. He had a point. He had a point.
Like, if your job is to do outside contain, so you get your contain. But if the play's going the other way, you can beat the shit out of your guy and shed the block and just chase the play.
Right.
Or you can, you know, keep the tackle and try and keep it off. Like, there's a lot more versatility in it as opposed to, like, you're pulling and you have to go hit this guy. If you don't hit this guy, your play's fucked. But you can kind of get out of position and make a play on defense and still make a play.
Pretty much. Like, there's no real improvision on the side of the offensive line.
Except for, like, pass pro. But that's really it.
And that's barely. Like, you can only determine where the D lineman goes but so much before. Right. Like, if I keep stepping inside and you're going outside, eventually you're going to be out. You're just going to be hitting my quarterback in the nutsack, and then we all going to have to deal with that shit.
Except for, like, I've always thought about, like, I would see those plays, those highlights where, like, a guard would be, like, setting in and have no work, and they always say, you know, go find work or whatever, and he would see, like, the left tackle goes over and gets beat, so he pulls out of the pocket and goes and cleans out the DN so the quarterback gets it. Those are always the coolest highlights.
Those plays hit me in the warm fuzzies every time.
Like, you're like, not only am I in position, but I can go over here and I can take care of this guy too.
Exactly. It's like, all right, the inside is held down. You know who's the best of that now? Quentin Nelson does that so beautifully. Like, literally, he's always looking for something to do. He's dropping back, three-man rush. Whoever is the unlucky bastard to come closer to him at that moment, he's cleaning him up.
He's a goddamn manimal.
Oh, he's just so fun to watch. He's just so fun to watch. Like, it's rare we have offensive linemen that are just fun. Like, the last one I remember enjoying watching was, like, Orlando Pace. Like, Joe Thomas was great, but he was great because he held shit down and did his job and kept his nose clean. Which, as offensive linemen, awesome. Do all those things. However, you want a little pizzazz on that joint, you go to Quentin Nelson and watch him put somebody down.
Oh, yeah. Who was that? There was Brandon Scherff, too. Brandon Scherff or whatever.
Oh, man. His college highlights are insane. If you enjoy watching offense, just pure dominance, look up the Brandon Scherff Iowa highlights. Oh, my God. You'll completely understand why the Redskins took him fifth in that draft. Because, oh, my God. Just, ugh. People were up, and then they were down just that fast. Like, just boom, 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 boom.
Yep. But outside of football, seventh grade is when I was introduced really to lacrosse. Like, I had known about it, but it wasn't, like, ingrained. Like, I hadn't really been introduced to it. So, but when that happened, lacrosse took over, and it was definitely my passion until it got ruined for me by bullying in high school. The end? Yeah.
All right. That's cool. Cause
that's a separate TED talk.
I asked Dan this question. Do you feel like if you would have focused on just one sport or the other, you could have gone further in the sport, or do you feel like they worked in concert with one another?
That's kind of tough to say because, you know, you think about the, whether or not you'd actually be improved that much as opposed to, like, whether you get burned out by.
Damn it, we lost Duke again. And now we wait.
Earth to Kevin.
He's back.
I know. I saw you froze earlier this time, so I was able to realize it. All right, we're gonna pause for a second again, just because I'm gonna switch to my hotspot and it should do better.
All right, cool. Here we are. We're waiting.
We're waiting while we're singing a song. We're singing a song and we're eating some pie because we.
He's gone.
How we doing?
He's back.
Let's get it.
All right. We were talking about, you were saying
focusing
something
on
along the lines of you don't know if it's going to be more you improving or more you burnt out from the sport.
Yeah, I don't know if that would help you go any farther per se, but I definitely think it's about knowing your body and where you fit in the sport you're playing. You know, so look at it from football standpoint. As an offensive lineman, I'm undersized. You know, I'm just around hitting 6'1", 6 foot, maybe 6'1" on a good day. Depends on who's measuring me. And then, like, you know, so maybe I'm interior offensive line, or maybe I'm a center. But other than that, like, I'm not going to be, you know, a starting left tackle for the Patriots anytime soon. No matter how much I work at it and how much I work out, you know, there's a chance. But there's been, like, one D3 offensive lineman to make it in the NFL or some shit like that.
Yes.
So, like, it's low probability if you know that you're not built for it. Now, if I was playing lacrosse, I would have had to have slimmed down a lot. But, like, my height and my length is perfect for – and my physicality was perfect for playing defense when the offensive players are smaller. You can kind of reach over them. You have like a huge reach advantage. Where I think if I had lost some weight and kind of worked on my speed and like agility, I think I would have had more long-term success. You know, I feel like I could have played on the Stevenson lacrosse team. That team was not terrible all the way there.
Oh, no. Didn't they win a natty the year before we got there or something like that?
Yeah, 2013.
Yeah, so those aren't no chums, and I agree, and I have no reason to disagree with you that you'd be able to hop on this team and be a contributor, man.
So, as I'm saying that, I just remembered that I was at that 2013 National Championship. Completely coincidental. I was there for the weekend with my dad. We would go every year. So we went to the D2, D3 national championship game the day before the finals for D1. And Stevenson's playing, and I'm like, oh, I'm kind of, like, heard about this school. I'm like, no, like, I know of them and everything. I think I met Coach Beard at this point. And I went, and we're in the stands, and we're in the Stevenson area of the stands. And, like, I had some weird interactions, somewhat hostile, I think, about, like, someone being standing up in, like, the line of view so you couldn't see the game. And that person on, now when I look back on it, had a camo hat on. So it could have been a booster, it could have been a coach, it could have been someone football related.
But this is like pissed off.
That I yeah, exactly. Like just to mark how my career at Stevenson Sports would go.
Oh man. So you touched on it slightly, but you kind of danced around it. When did Stevenson get introduced to you? Because I'm always interested about how people that aren't from the area end up at Stevenson.
Yeah, so I don't exactly remember the full context of it, but I think it was somewhere along the lines of – so my high school coach, he knew what I wanted and didn't want out of school, so he was, like, filtering, like, interest in me. From like, he was keeping the wideness. He was keeping the bell valves out of things. Schools that I didn't want to go to just based on, like, their programs and, their, like, you know, where they are and everything.
Right.
I don't remember what school it was, but some school like was said like, oh hey, we're doing like this, you know, there's like this school that's doing like a little like you know, not like a combine thing, but like a workout day, like a high school pro day or something. And I went there for that other school because they were interested. Maybe it was Stevenson that emailed me, but I was fresh out of shoulder surgery, so I was no contact. So it was nothing but form and like demeanor and stuff like that, and which I'm really good at. I can do all that with the walkthrough stuff. It's really pretty easy. And Beard just kind of like took a liking to me and started recruiting from there.
There we go. And then the rest is history. We end up at Stevenson. So
yep.
Take me to, what is it? What was it? August 12th, 2014? Somewhere in that range.
I think it was August 10 is what sticks in my head, but that might have been the second year.
One of them years. Somewhere in that 10 to 12, 8 to 12 range, where it's our first day on campus. Yeah, I'm assuming you don't know anybody on the team coming in. Talk to me about that.
So I don't really know anybody. I got in a few weeks before my roommate's assignment or whatever with a few people that we ended up being friends with while we were there. And I was like, okay, that's cool. Like, I hadn't really talked to them or anything. But I do recall when I got there, they said, oh, the room assignments have been changed. And, you know, so I ended up seeing, like, going to my room, you know. I don't even remember Western Run, I think it was. It's probably what it was called. They're on the fourth floor, and I was in there, and I see a whole bunch of hairy Italian Greek-looking motherfuckers, and with all the due love and respect for the Kadakis family, they've been absolutely wonderful, and I'm still great friends with Nick. But
but they are very much Greek and Italian.
Yes, and so they're taking up one space, and I'm in the other room by myself because I didn't have a roommate that first semester. And so I'm in there, and then Connor's there too, and, you know, we kind of, like, say hey or whatever. The parents go, like, awkwardly, hey, our kids are living together now or something. And then we had to go report to, like, a meeting or some shit like that. And, you know, I remember it rained that day too. It was, like, this, like, that, like, orange.
It was something serious move-in day. I remember that shit.
It was it was one of those storms, like afternoon storms where it blends with golden hour. And then the whole area gets that like golden hue and that with like that like reddish kind of tinge. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And it's like a little sticky still, but it just kind of feels like this other world you're in. So I am in, so we have to walk down there and there's rain. People are moving cars around and everything. And I remember I have to walk down for the meeting, so I put on those greens and grays, and I put in my headphones and I'm listening to Kings of Leon That album with that Sex on Fire is on, and the song Closer. It's like the first or second song on the album, and it just like has this like kind of like synth horn that's like really like kind of slow playing, but like kind of like ambience. Like there's a lot of ambience to it. I don't really know how to describe it. And so I'm walking down the street with that orange, with that yellow hue, walking down that big ass hill. And, you know, and it's like sweating, but also raining. So you can't tell it's sweat or rain. And that's my first memory of Stevenson when you really like put it down, like come down to it. Now, yeah, that's really, yeah, I think that's my first Stevenson memory.
There we go. So there's a couple things along your Stevenson journey that I want to make sure we make a point of. But first of which is you ended up switching majors to Stevenson. And I'm always interested about people who switch majors or change career paths because you're set one way for such a long time and then it suddenly flips. So tell me about how that happened. The two majors you did have at Stevenson, the flipping, take me through that process.
All right, so always been a science nerd. I took AP Chemistry as like a sophomore in high school. I fucking loved that shit. Still do to a degree. And started out as a chemistry major. I was going to do the 4-in-1 forensic chemistry program, get that master's out of 5 years at the school. I get like a year into it. I become a pothead. I kind of enjoy college a little too much. And, you know, I just was playing football and I had a social life and I just didn't prioritize my things properly. And I had a really just poor semester where I was just disengaged with everything. I was depressed. I wasn't happy. But I thought I was because I was in a new relationship. And I just decided I needed to change. And I had been reading. I took a Psych 101 class and did well in it. But like really was just enjoying thinking about the psych and the more abstract aspects of things instead of the hard chemistry of like, you know, balancing equations or thermodynamics and stuff like that. So I kind of just flipped there, and it was a time of flux in my life. I needed to make some changes. I needed to kind of adjust who I was being and everything. So in one semester, I stopped playing football, changed majors, kind of just completely cut off what I was doing with just like certain friends that I was hanging out with at the time, you know. Dove into a new relationship. It was just a big time flux and change. And out of it, I came into psych. I was in the psych department. It was like getting a fresh start 2 years through college. And I was really able to like kind of find something that I enjoyed doing enough that, you know, I'm still doing it now.
I was just about to say, sorry, what did you say?
Which is psychology. I don't know if I said that.
No, I was going to ask, so why was it psychology then? Because going from the study of chemistry and chemicals and reactions to the study of basically people, that doesn't seem like a natural transition or something.
So every external action, decision, force, like thought process, even when you feel an emotion, that's a chemical reaction in your brain. And that's amazing to me that it somehow goes from that two-dimensional chemistry kind of standpoint where you think of things in that kind of like equation point. It's going on in your head, and it not only creates the new like neurotransmitters or the metabolites or whatever's getting like the glands that are like being activated to express whatever's going on, but you're also you've created this third level of just consciousness that like it's just super interesting to me. Like it comes through you, that consciousness has been created through chemistry and chemical reactions, and that absolutely just astounded me.
There we go. What a fucking answer.
So,
because again, people don't see the bridge between the two, but I hope that God they do now. Great job by you.
And but like beyond that, like I still want to do criminal like aspects of things. You know, I didn't want to be a lab tech. I didn't want to be running the same 30 dye tests a day, trying to like decide what chemical was, how much it was cocaine, or if people got ripped off with some Abraxas. And you know. It wasn't really capturing it. So I switched to psychology. I want to do profiling. I've done internships with the FBI. I, you know, do a lot of psych studies. I've published research. And it's just a lot more it's just more abstract and kind of just more thought-provoking for me.
There we go. Now, at that point, you need the thought-provoking part. Wow. I think I forgot the English
it's hard.
For like 2 seconds, words just weren't my thing. Like, oh, my God. You would think someone who talks all day long would just nail these words down. But no, it never works that way.
Well, that's when I was little, I had actually a really bad, like, stutter for a little bit. It wasn't, like, a pronounced, like, typical one, but it was more of, like, what we're describing, where you know what you want to say and you know how to say it, but your brain starts running a little bit faster than your body and your tongue tend to match up. Like, I bit my tongue the other day, so it's swollen. I know I'm, like, I can feel it scraping against my teeth and stuff. Like, it hurts. But I know it's going to throw off some of my words, so I'm being really careful with how I'm, like, you know, talking and, like, dictating.
Right.
You know, I always imagine it as, like, those cartoon things where, like, someone starts, like, Wile E. Coyote starts chasing after the Roadrunner, and, like, he has, like, a carpet under his feet or whatever, and it's that, it, like, burls up at the back because he's not going anywhere because he's just moving the carpet with his feet. That's how I kind of envision when you're talking, you're thinking too fast and your tongue's trying to keep up and you just can't do it.
One hell of a mess. You're killing it with the mental pictures today, by the way.
Hmm.
Just killing it. Two for two. What a great guy. So, outside of changing majors, you also changed roommates halfway through your college career and were rooming with, among our brother David Mild and Devon. David's already been on. Devon will be on later. Or it'll probably be out by now. I don't know. I used to know how I had these. Every time I think I have these episodes in order of when I want to drop them, I change. Like, every single time. So, Lord knows what the Devon episode is out by now. But if it is, listen to it. But you were with them. And with yours truly, the goat of all roommates, me, Kev Kadeem Pierce. So, I must ask you if you concur that I am the goat of all roommates.
You are definitely the goat of all roommates. And my one distinction over that for you and what makes that you instead of my current roommate, Carly, who's leaving in 2 days, is...
Shout out to Carly.
That you, when we get fucked up or we go party or whatever, you don't drive me insane needing so much attention. And that's...
You know what? I take pride in that because the last thing I want to be is the drunk friend you got to take care of. Like, every single time, that's like, bro, you got to be able to make it to your own bed at least. Like, through our times getting fucked up, I can't remember a time where I was incapacitated via my drunkenness.
Well, see, the thing about that, though, is when we were at Stevenson's together, we weren't really going out, like bars or, like that wasn't our thing.
Yeah.
So I feel like... limited the opportunity for that to happen.
Very true. Plus, every time we went out to bars, we're still broke college students who it's still $10 a drink is still $10 a drink at the end of the day.
I was thinking about it like when I was at college, I was like, oh, I made so much money over the summer that I didn't work during school. Like, I made that conscious choice to, like, save my money and parse it out so that I, like, didn't have to, like, you know, work while I was at school. I could actually enjoy myself or dip around if I wanted to.
Right.
And I realized, like, I was scrounged. Like, I was eating, like, those instant noodles all the time. Like, college was more of, like, I'm not trying to spend all this dumb money struggle than I remember it being. Like, now looking back. Like, I obviously went to Wawa a lot, and we spent, you know, we had, you know, certain...
Oh, God. You know, I wish I could see the amount of money we spent at Wawa in front of me, bro. We'll probably be disgusting. Like,
that with the vegetarian diet was just, oh, man, that was just a big burning hole in the pocket. Because by that time, we were buying, you know, we were filling jars and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Whew. Like, about this, I wish I had the numbers in front of me to I don't know. I would love to see it in full context.
Right. Like, we had those car rides where it was just, like, the number of, like, heads to, like, wraps was, like, out, like, insane,
bro.
People ask me, like, my crazy smoking stories, and I'm like, it's got to be the times when there were, like, four people in an SUV and, like, a dozen blunts,
and you don't know what to do at that point.
You get to, like, eight and you're like, shit, man, there's no talking anymore. We just got music going. We're all just trying to survive right now.
It's all, it's, you don't know whether it's the vibe or if it's survival at that
point. Right, like, oh my God. I used to think I realized that's what it was. Because remember when I was so afraid about that I wasn't a social enough high, like high person, yes. Like I wasn't like socially apt at it?
Yes.
I realized it was because we were getting so fucking high, I couldn't talk. I just didn't have words for things to say. Like, I was just enjoying the moment. Like, when I started, like, doing, like, my, like bar side, my, like, side bartending work up here, and I had a really good setup at a job where I was performing in front of people doing, like, you know, fake potions and stuff, like, information in the bio, link on the you know, the work.
Right.
But I used to get really creative, and I used to be, you know, I used to be high as shit doing that stuff, like talking to customers, like screaming, making them do flat, like fancy magical tic-tac-toe and stuff. And I realized it was just because I didn't know how to manage it. Like it used to be like just getting like how absolutely baked can I get, not as opposed to like how can I make this the most fun.
But that's college though.
It was fun. No, it was a learning experience, and I realized how much I grew from that after all that worrying.
There we go. So, slightly switching the topic. So, what is your favorite, I guess, kickback / session we had during those college years?
Man, I want to say we had a pregame before the Mile Cookout senior year that was absolutely lit.
The Jungle, was that the Jungle Juice Day?
I think so, but that might have been the Super Bowl. I really don't remember. Yeah, it was the Jungle Juice Day. That was the Jungle Juice Day.
It was the Jungle Juice Day. Because I remember... Because there were two Super Bowls that happened while we were roommates, and I believe both of them involved my favorite team, the New England
Patriots. Were hilarious, by the way.
Both of them were, for people that weren't me, probably were the greatest thing happening in life.
You know, I gotta say though, I did have a Super Bowl party this year that kind of surpassed it because I don't remember the game, but I remember the party.
There we go. And the Super Bowl this past year was boring as fuck anyway.
Oh, no, it was a terrible Super Bowl, so it was easy to do that. But we had...
I'm not thinking of the Chiefs Super Bowl. For some reason, I was thinking of the Patriots-Rams Super Bowl.
Well, yeah, that one was bad, too. That one was really bad. But that one, the Chiefs 49ers Super Bowl. That one was... I think it was a good game, but I don't remember. I remember, like, two plays. That's all I got.
One second, Patrick Mahomes threw the ball very far. The next minute, the Chiefs won.
Yeah, exactly. Tyreek Hill probably caught one.
right.
Dan probably cheered. He got some confetti. That's all I remember.
There it is. And now we have the awesome picture of Dan kissing the trophy.
Right? Like, that's tough as hell. Like, that's a forever flex.
That shit's so cool, bro. Like, when I was talking to Dan about – I know for a fact that episode's out. When I was talking to Dan about it, he tried to play it so coy, and I'm like, bro, do you understand how great – for reference, his dad was a coach in the league for how long and didn't get his ring until retirement? Like, him, he was in the league for 6 months. Like, you can't write the story better than
that. Exactly. He went to the right situation with Big Red. And, you know, because you think about when we were at Stevenson and stuff, how hyped we all were when we got to, like, the ECAC Bowl freshman year. And, like, thought about that. That's that on steroids, on, like, the highest.
Like, literally, head of the mountaintop.
Like, Everest and Kilimanjaro combined with a ladder to go up to the International Space Station.
There we go. Like, and he was on top of that bitch.
Exactly. And, you know, I haven't talked to Dan about it, but, like, I assume he's getting, like, the coaching staffs are getting, and interns are getting rings out of this. So he's going.
Oh, yeah. And when he comes back to Maryland, I'm forcing him to wear that shit everywhere we go. And I wish somebody would say something to us.
Hell yeah. That's a flex.
Oh, yeah. Like, put that joint on your middle finger so they know. So that they know. All right. So. I gotta ask one last Stevenson question.
Let's get it.
Compare Mustang Day Duke to Graduation Day Duke.
What the hell was Mustang Day?
That was what our orientation days were called, dude.
You were the one that was involved with the school, so I don't remember what that shit was called. I did everything by proxy through you or through Active Mind stuff. Like, there was no other, like, involvement on my end.
So you didn't go to orientation?
I went. Okay, so my orientation story is amazing.
Go for it.
All right, so we had I went to a public school in Atlantic County, New Jersey for high school, and we had several snow days the year we graduated. So my graduation day was June 19th. My Mustang day, I believe you were in the same program, so we was the same. You remember it was the same day. It was June 20th, or no, it was June 19th. No, it was June 20th.
It was the 20th.
Yeah, so it was June 20th. So my graduation got pushed back another day. But we do one of those after graduation things so people aren't drunk driving and stuff. That's like one of those like 10 p.m. to like 4 a.m. things that didn't get scheduled because of all the bookings and stuff. So I was at that after a half day of school. I was at that till 4 in the morning. Immediately left that, got 2 hours of sleep, went to a party for an hour, left that, got 2 hours of sleep, and then my parents woke me up, and we drove down to Stevenson. I get there, I'm like,
don't you drove yourself?
Well, my parents drove me down.
Okay, that would have added a legend to this. Oh, my God.
So I'm at the Stevenson Mustangs Day, and I go through all this, the registering, you know, find out your email and everything, all that freshman BS. And I'm in this shirt that I had just gotten that I hadn't had a chance to try on yet, so it's a little tight around the arms and everything, but I feel jacked in it, so I was like, fine, it's fine.
Right.
But I'm pretty sure at one point I lost circulation, my arm because the sleeve was a little too tight, but that was neither here nor there. So I have this is all on 2 hours of sleep, by the way. So that's why my Stevenson ID picture was atrocious. But
you know what? Looking back at it, having that information, because I remember the picture, it makes a lot more sense now.
Right. So I'm absolutely gassed. And then so that ends, and I'm like, we're like, okay, I got to go. So I drove up, because I had graduation that, like, afternoon now. So I drove all the way back home, got to graduation, as they were starting to line up for the procession in, rushed into that bitch, was like putting on a tie and everything, you know, trying to, you know, get my shit together. Had the gown and cap and gown and all that. Went into all that. I had some nice 2014 Happy New Year glasses where like you see it on the eyes. It was in the newspaper and everything. It was lit. Went to graduation, did all that. Nothing bad happened at my graduation, which if you know my school or where I'm from, that's amazing, because there's been tornadoes, there's been hailstorms, there's been a whole bunch of wild shit. And I ended up...
The water, man, that'll do that shit to you.
And then after that, we were like, we just graduated. So what do you think I went out and did? We went out and partied. And so then I'm out.
So we're still on the same 2 hours of sleep at this point.
Oh, definitely.
This man is Iron Man.
We go out. I think it was a nap squeezed in there somewhere. Like, I think I found some time. But, like, it was very abrupt because we went to the beach, too. There was beach volleyball going on. There was a whole lot going on that day. And so we went out, and then we were out drinking, or, you know, just graduation. There was Everclear involved. And yogurt. It was just a lot. And then, yeah, that was my Mustang day. So graduation can't top that. So that, but comparing the two, graduation day was great because it was free and I was sick of that place.
There we go. I was more so focusing on you as a person from Mustang day to graduation day.
Okay, great. Now that I just did that whole story that was a legendary story, but not answering your question.
Oh, the moment you said I had a story, my question went out the window. I was like, I'll ask that shit later.
I want to say I definitely was more mature. I, you know, experienced a little bit more of the world. I was a little bit more mellow. You know, I think herbal enhancements really helped that in my growth. Because, man, in high school, I was uptight and I just hated everything. And, you know, it just... I really kind of just formed more social bonds. Like you and David and like are like the longest like regular friendships I've had, like that I consistently still talk to the people. Like I'm friends with people from growing up, but like we don't really talk on the regular. They've got their own lives and shit going on. But like, right. I'm like, you know, I care about what's going on with y'all, and like I want to make sure y'all are good. And when all the when the struggles hit and things get heavy, you know, as Bill Withers said, you just need somebody to lean on.
There we go. Shout out, rest in peace, Bill Withers. Oh my God. Somebody to. All right, let me stop.
I'll do sing along version. Fuck it.
Hey, that's actually a perfect transition because I want to end talking about music a little bit. Because although you started late, you did become an aficionado pretty fast when it comes to understanding the music. So I want to ask, what is your Mount Rushmore musical artist?
All right, so first time we talked about, this briefly, I wasn't sure where to go in the form of entertainment versus musical artists.
Which is why I always say whatever musical artist means to you.
So I went with creators.
All right. Okay. So
I want to think about people who had the most influence on the music that I love. And so it's got to be up there a lot. So it's going to be, I'm going to have one that's got a hyphen slash like backslash on it. Mm-hmm. And that one is going to be, my brain's just completely blanked, but Motown, head of Motown and Smokey Robinson. I don't know why in my head. Barry Gordy and Smokey Robinson as a combo. That system as together, all that Motown, like that is just so iconic for the whole all the music that came after it. That team just needs to be recognized on any Mount Rushmore. So I don't know if it's going to be like a Harvey Dent Two-Face thing, or if it's going to be like a.
Funny enough, I pictured the Harvey Dent Two-Face when you said the two names in the slash. So we're going with that one.
Perfect. All right. Next up is going to be Rick Rubin.
Ooh, okay.
Absolute Zen master of music. He really epitomized what I kind of relate to in music is the blending of genres and bridging the gap from like cultures that weren't really together. So this man started out in the punk scene, brought the rap scene together, brought it out of the shadows, did all that work, started Def Jam. Like this man has influenced all of the Red Hot Chili Peppers albums that I absolutely love. Worked with the Beastie Boys and Run DMC. It's just everything. Like there was the Broken Record. He just had an interview with RZA the other day, and I was listening to that thing. I absolutely loved it. Which brings me to RZA because I feel like he has to be on there, but like. He does too much of like a narrow niche to be really like a top artist.
So but that niche he does though, that's the thing. He may not have
the first super producer.
Yeah, like he may not have like a Pharrell level versatility, but what he does well, ain't too many people, if any, can say they do better.
Right, and so. You also mentioned Pharrell. He was very close up on this list. He was like hanging around five or six. But really to close out the other two, it's got to be Prince for one. Because, you know, it's Prince.
You don't got to explain Prince. It's Prince. Like, just.
And, you know, outside of, and so we kind of talked briefly about having the, a poll about that, who that last person would be for me, because I had so many people to fill into that spot. But then I really thought about who I wanted to like really exemplify this last spot. And it's Brian Wilson, the creative force behind the Beach Boys.
Mm.
He's wrote all of their songs. He's a wonderful organizer. I don't know if you can think of the song Good Vibrations off the top of your head.
The good vibration.
Like, you think of that, and that's like an infectious earworm. Like, something like that. Like, positive songs are so hard to write. And he does it so well when he wants to, like, think about how he thinks about life, when he views about how he wants life to be. But he's also been really public about his struggles with mental health. He's been considered one of those insane musical geniuses that, like, has that touch of madness in him. And it's really, because of that, he kind of, like, exemplifies, like, just kind of being yourself and kind of presenting and being, like, doing what makes you you while also being able to, like, help other people convey emotions that they can't convey themselves. There's just so many like things I could point to. God Only Knows is one of his great songs where he kind of talks about how people kind of where how like people that even people that ruin your life, they have such a profound influence on where you end up and who you become that you can't understand life without your worst enemy the same way you can't understand life without your best friend.
Ooh, that's a bar for that ass. So to recap, we got the Berry Gordy, Smokey Robinson, Two-Face, Harvey Dent mashup.
Yes.
We got the RZA.
We got Rick Rubin.
Rick Rubin. Prince. I knew it was an R. Prince, and then Brian Wilson to end it all out.
Yep.
All right, so the last thing I'll ask you to do before I cut you off. Okay. As I said earlier, you are a Ravens fan, and a phenomenon that has never been on the Ravens. Yep, there you go, right there. A phenomenon has struck the Ravens that they have never experienced before. The Ravens have a legitimate star quarterback.
Oh, yes, they do.
In the history of the Ravens, they have had many things, including that man right there, Ray Lewis, including Ed Reed, many defensive stars. But not once have they had the offensive superstar that Lamar Jackson is, and I know he brings you such great joy, which is why I'm giving you 1 minute, uninterrupted, unfiltered, to talk about Lamar Jackson. I wish people could see your face right now. The joy that came to his face. Please watch the video version of this so you can
after
see
the years. After the years of the Joe. Okay, at first I loved Joe Flacco because he was you know a hotshot kid that loved to shoot the ball deep, and then you watched him turn into a granny. Oh, there's nothing covered. Oh, I'm gonna check down right here. There's another derogatory term for how he was playing that I'm not gonna use anymore because we're growing past that as a culture. But you know, all right, now's my minute starting. That was just a preface with this is just after the Joe Flacco era. So this Lamarvelous. Lamarkable. You're reigning La MVP. Lamar Jackson has finally shown that, well, actually hasn't shown it yet because this year is going to be important about how he responds year three, of showing how productive and how dynamic a running back can be. But he's not a running back because he can throw the ball. Lamar Jackson is a quarterback, and he has shattered in the same way that Mahomes shattered the youth thing. He has shattered this alternate style quarterback. It is the main style. We're about to see the wildest thing with Cam Newton in a Patriots jersey. And we'll talk about that a little bit off camera. But Lamar Jackson is a dynamic playmaker, and he's a dynamic leader. You see him out at the Pro Bowl out there bringing water out to the players after he was out of the game. He loves the game. He loves playing football. He loves proving people wrong. And I really can't wait for that playoff monkey to get off his back so that people can really give him the unrelenting credit he deserves. Because he took what Michael Vick did and what he kind of – and Randall Cunningham did before him, and he's turned it into – no, we're going to – and instead of the NFL and John Harbaugh turning him into their system, they said, no, we have this best athlete. We're going to let him do the things he does best, and we're going to build around him in a way no other team has committed to doing before, especially to this type of – to, like, a running speed quarterback that hits the dirtiest spin move in the world but can also throw 70-yard darts. I don't know if he can throw 70, probably, like, 50. But, like, it's
– Lamar Jackson, ladies and gentlemen, the superstar and the joy of Duke's heart. What brings him so much joy? I do. There's one quarterback that I own that always gets left out of this conversation because his run was short. Colin Kaepernick in that 49ers offense went to a Super Bowl 1 year and then was a great play for Richard Sherman the next year from going right back. So I can't in good conscience leave Colin Kaepernick out this conversation.
No, he needs to be mentioned. But you know what you also have to think about? Because I went back and watched that Super Bowl and a few other – I've been hitting a lot of the old football games because, you know, there's nothing going on.
Right. And,
you know, Greg Roman, the Ravens offense coordinator, was the 49ers offensive coordinator that year too with Kaepernick doing the same – basically the pistol offense. And – he came and you got Lamar, and you have a team that is behind him, as the Ravens are one of the most ethnically diverse and accepting fan bases that I think among the entire NFL, with the way they act on the field and the way they present themselves. They kind of have that Miami Hurricanes kind of swagger in the 21st century that I think has been really good for football over the years, that they're turning this they're running with this identity right now as a franchise and a fan base too, because everyone's bought into it and are just so excited to see what's coming next. And I think if, you know, we didn't have RG3 back there too, I would gladly want Kaepernick to have us. If someone else is going to try and replicate this success, Kaepernick's quarterback to do it. He still is.
Absolutely.
His Squidwardness aside, I think, you know,
Squidwardness.
I think he has the talent. I just think, you know, I just don't think he had that kind of passing mentality. Like when he went to run, when he decided he was going to run or throw, and he kind of like he would decide that he was going to pretend to run and then throw and then look for a pass. Lamar's doing it all reactionarily. I think Kaepernick was thinking too much, and I think that's what set him apart and did not succeeding long term. Besides getting, you know, blackballed.
That and losing Greg Roman as coordinator.
Hey, I'm happy to have him.
The Greg Roman thing is what gives me hope for Lamar Jackson. It's like, thank God he didn't get hired for any head coaching jobs. Like, you still got him. I will fear for Lamar when Greg Roman is gone. So not to say that Greg Roman is the reason for his success, but it's more so of this guy who carefully curated this offense for you is no longer there. And it's not, they can put some an underling or something, they can promote somebody, but it's not going to be the same.
Right. But another thing to think about, I just want to make this point noted because I just thought of it and I think I like it and I want it to be like recorded here in history. So Joe Flacco is the reason that this is happening right now.
Expound.
If they don't win that Super Bowl, if he doesn't go on that run and do that, one, Greg Roman's a head coach somewhere. Colin Kaepernick, the league goes in that whole direction, and Lamar probably doesn't fall to the Ravens at 31 or 32. So on that end, that. But if John Harbaugh wasn't a Super Bowl winning coach and Steve Bisciotti wasn't a trusting owner, there would not be unless it was like New England or something, which even that has shown, you know, flakes in the armor based on the coach and owner relationship, that this team could do this transition. The fact that they built it so quickly aside, that if they went and did this actual rebuild, that Super Bowl gives Harbaugh the legacy to not get fired and not go on the hot seat and to really do what he needs to do to make a change so quickly.
That's a great point, because I think about John Harbaugh's been on the hot seat a couple of times. Hell, I think I may have heard you or Dave call for his job at least once on Opening Kickoff Podcast. And that Super Bowl is really what they kept pointing back to be like, nah, he's a Super Bowl winning coach. That's right. Different from going to a Super Bowl, clearly, because John Harbaugh is coaching for Michigan right now. When did he even get fired? It wasn't very long after that Super Bowl loss.
No, it was the next year. Like, the Kaepernick thing kind of petered out a little bit. Alex Smith was gone, and I think like a few months after that he just got fired. Because didn't they have that whole like San Francisco 49ers are like falling to shit moment, and he got caught in that?
Yeah, and that's honestly, I attributed that more to, you can look historically, teams not named the Patriots who just lost the Super Bowl, and like the Bills who just lost the Super Bowl, usually suck the next year. Like, once it's happenstance, twice it's coincidence. This happens like every single year. Go look at the fucking Falcons. They have not recovered since that Super Bowl.
Falcons,
Broncos. The Rams this year. I don't expect the 49ers to take a dive, but this seems to happen to everyone not named Patriots. So I don't know
if you trust Jimmy G yet.
I trust Jimmy G. You take a team to a Super Bowl, I trust you.
Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl. Do you trust Trent Dilfer?
For that season and that team makeup, yes. And comparing Jimmy Garoppolo to Trent Dilfer is very unfair.
Yes, I know.
Trent Dilfer had to score 14 points to win games, and he could barely do that.
Hey, I was watching that.
But
that team went two games of that season without scoring a touchdown and then won the Super Bowl.
Like, that's ridiculous. Like, that's why the 2000 Ravens – look, I wasn't born in 1986. I've only watched but so much of the Bears. I'll be damned if there's a better defense than the 2000 Ravens, bro, simply because of what they had to deal with on the other side of the ball.
The people that come up with the whole, like, 2002 Bucks or, like, the – those Seahawks from a few, the Legion of Doom of Boom Seahawks and stuff. It's just I think the Ravens one still has it. And I have favoritism, so I maybe can't say that, but I just don't think that the ferocity stands up.
The Patriots defense last year had the chance to join that conversation until we played Yo. Then from that point on, it kind of went downhill. Not sharp downhill, but like it was like, okay, this isn't a historically great defense. They're just really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even thinking of the other teams you named, the thing about the Tampa team is we had their defense down. We know what the Tampa 2 is. That's more of a scheme thing. Yeah, they had insane players, but that's more of a scheme thing. When it comes to the Ravens, there was not a set defensive scheme. They had multiple, and they had players that can play everywhere.
A lot like now.
Yeah, nah. Just,
Hey, that's our front eight is – our front seven's a little weak, but that secondary core, tell me one that's better.
Fair. Only one I got is the Patriots. That's it. And that's because we got the best cornerback in football. In my opinion, we got the best defensive player in football on our team.
Marlon Humphrey is going to see that title in a year or so.
He's good. Your man Marlon's good. He ain't my man bump and run, though. He not bump and run Gilly.
I mean
– can I tell you – hold on, real quick. So what bothers me about Stephon Gilmore last year – and we're going to end soon because we're rambling at this point. But what bothered me the most about Stephon Gilmore last year – was the one receiver that got him was Devontae fucking Parker. Who would have known? Who would have guessed? It would have been Devontae Parker who gave that nigga buckets.
Devontae Parker's a baller.
He is, but he's gross. We went against Odell that year and DeAndre Hopkins. Hopkins beats on everybody. He strapped DeAndre Hopkins.
I feel bad for Deshaun.
Listen, man. And we lost that game. We lost that Texas game. So the fact that Devontae Parker, of all the receivers, was the one to catch Gilly slipping, ace my soul. But anyways, we're going to go ahead and end this before I go on a rant about my Patriots team from last year because I have a lot of issues. So thank you, Duke, for coming on. You've been more than generous with your time.
Hey, this was an absolute pleasure, you know.
I'm happy you feel that way. For the fans and the listeners, thank you so much for listening this far. You could be anywhere in the world, but you're here with me listening to me talk and my man Duke talk, and that's good for me and my ego. So, for my brother Duke Becker, for myself, Brother Beloved, a.k.a. Kevin K. Pierce, this has been Experiment 301. We will talk to you guys next time.
Peace out, Girl Scouts.